Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. And now it is truly my privilege to introduce to you tonight, all the way from Granada Hills, Los Angeles, Astrid.
Hi, I'm Astrid, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, I want to thank the whole group for asking me to come, and especially Carla, and for her ongoing service here. It's really good to be here. I think this is my second or maybe even third time here. Welcome to all the newcomers and out-of-towners, and happy birthday to the birthday people. It's really beautiful to see Alcoholics Anonymous and people that have trudged the road and really walked through the steps and had a psychic change. And if those people weren't there when I came in, I'd have no place to go either. So it's a privilege. It really is. I'm a retread. That means this is my second time getting sober. And the first time I got sober, I did the steps as a homework assignment. And I didn't listen. And I didn't apply things, and I didn't really have a God, and I just thought, you know, get a sponsor and get through the steps and clean some ashtrays and suit up and show up. And I didn't understand what a psychic change was. I didn't understand what really letting go was, or prayer and meditation, or the restraint of pen and tongue, or a spiritual principle, or live and let live, or staying in my lane, or keeping my side of the street clean, or any of those things. And if I heard them, they all sounded good, but I never really put that into a full practice. I was sort of a hit or a miss. And what I didn't realize is that I was actually in untreated alcoholism. And there are so many people that have the same path that I do, and we wind up in AA, and we don't do the steps, and we don't have a psychic change, and we loiter with the intent to recover. And then what happens is someday down the line, it becomes me and the bottle always wins. And, you know, there's only 2% of alcoholics that ever stay sober for 5 years. So we have a 98% chance of relapsing if you have under 5 years. This isn't a joke. It's a life and death situation. It's a real disease. The American Medical Association has stamped and bona fide that it's a disease. Now your health insurance will even cover you to spin dry and Camp Snoopy and get yourself a $40,000 big book and round and around and around. And a lot of people are actually making a lot of money off of our disease, which can really irritate me sometimes, because back in the day, it was all for fun and for free, you know, and Bill and Lois put a lot of wet ones on their couches. And you often, in the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous, it wouldn't be uncommon for some screaming, snot-flinging drunk guy to be in the back of the room, you know, where they even give him a beer to shut him up. And my, how things have changed in 76 years or 80 years, not that long. Alcoholics Anonymous hasn't even been here for 100 years. We in this room are the pioneers for Alcoholics Anonymous. We're forging the path. You know, Bill and Bob, they started this whole thing, but they didn't know what they were up against. They had no idea that 75, 78 years later, you know, half of the children in the United States of America would be on psych meds. They didn't know that meth would come in, and heroin would come in, and crack cocaine would come in, and all of these other drugs, and these, dual diagnosis, and all this stuff that makes things really like this. And what are we doing, and what's going on, and what's what, and can you help me at least have an understanding of what we're doing here, what we're trying to treat, who we're trying to help, and what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. So I'll get to that in a few minutes, but I'll give you a little history. That first time that I got sober, I remained restless, irritable, and discontent. And the big book says that if I don't do these steps and I don't have a psychic change, I will remain restless, irritable, and discontent. And that there's a very big chance that I will die. He uses the word doomed, that I'm doomed to an alcoholic death. And so I'd scream and yell at my daughter, and I'd scream and yell at people on the freeway, and I couldn't manage my money properly, and I couldn't get along with people, and I'd wake up in a panic attack, and I was always in fear, and I was constantly future surfing about what was going to happen, and I was always worried about people's approval and what they were thinking about me, and I still had huge resentments of the past. My parents and my family and all of this stuff really made me mad, and if only things had been different, maybe I wouldn't be in this boat, you know, and maybe I should do a geographical, maybe I need bigger tits, maybe I need a bigger house, maybe if I could just find a guy, maybe if I could get the right poodle, maybe if I could live somewhere else. You know, I don't know, my mind was just hijacking me all the time, and I had no idea that that had anything to do with untreated alcoholism. But you see, in the print, it says things like constantly reminding myself I'm no longer running the show. It says things like, you know, my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me. It says making a decision to turn my will in my life. Well, I would think that that would be my thought life also. So when we look at the doctor's opinion, it says the main part of the illness actually centers in the alcoholic's mind rather than her body. And I had to really, really come to grips with, what does that mean? But you see, I'm not going to concede to my innermost self that I'm really, really, really an alcoholic unless I've had a true, true experience. So the print will always tell you, why all this insistence that every AA must hit bottom first? Well, I'll tell you, if you didn't hit bottom here and you're just here on a court card or because your mom told you or because your wife's going to leave you or whatever, good luck. You know what? If you don't want to be here, don't worry, you won't. Because there's not enough self-will inside of you to get here every week. It's not going to happen. Something really has to shift inside. And the gift of desperation is called the gift of desperation because it's a gift. So as time went on with my, you know, 10 years of dry, so dry I could spontaneously combust or start a forest fire, things went from bad to worse to worse to worse. And I mean, really, I was just a bitch. I really was. I treated people really poorly. And I was depressed one minute, and then I was happy the next. And, you know, I was sideways this way and that way. And I was speaking my mind all over the place. And if you don't like who I am, well, then you're not for me. And get the hell out of my life. And blah, 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 blah. You know, and I was a nut. I was a nut. I was an untreated nut. So I dated this guy. You guys laugh because you can relate. So I dated this guy, and if you be a real alcoholic, you know what? Getting into a relationship is like pouring Miracle-Gro on your character defects. Out they're going to come, you know? And so I got into a relationship because I thought that would fix me. Now I'm in love, you know? And I never, ever worked on my social skills. I never worked on processing my anger. I never worked on, like, the idea that when I get mad, cuss words just come out and I shut the door, you know? I never worked on backing down or working things out or having a healthy discussion or apologizing or practicing the restraint of pen and tongue or just don't even say it at all or don't go near it or let it go. Those were ideas, but I never did that. And so I still was the same exact character without the liquor. I didn't need alcohol to ignite my untreated alcoholism. I needed finance and romance was plenty for me. You know, just add that to the bonfire that was already burning in my basement and I'm a lunatic. So I get into this relationship and of course, how do you think it's going to go? How many weeks or months do you think we're going to have good sex and be in love and then all of a sudden everything's going to start going to hell in a handbasket? Not very long. So we start fighting and the fighting escalates, you know. And like at this time, you know, my daughter's like 9 or 10 years old, you know. It's not funny. It's no joke. And she's seen me sober her whole life and she just can't believe this is going on. And at one point we broke up and I started going to therapy and I would just cry all the time. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. I'd never looked at untreated alcoholism. I'd never looked at the disease. I'd never looked at the main part of the disease centers in my mind. I'd never really conceded to my innermost self that I'm selfish and self-centered in the extreme, to the extreme. It's about me. I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. And that's it, period, across the board. I don't have time to think about you because I am completely self-absorbed and self-obsessed. I'm in survival mode all the time. It's kill or be killed. There's not enough. There's not enough of anything for me. So what do? I go home one day and I just make a decision to pick up a drink. And I had completely forgotten all about the phenomena of craving. You know, it's an interesting thing when you've forgotten about the phenomena of craving and you pick up the first drink. The first thing that happened for me is that, you know, the clouds just parted, angels trumpeted, God came down, and I felt that huge relief of like, oh my God, my mind is shutting up for a minute. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. But within 24 hours, I remember that here comes the phenomenon of craving. And I remember thinking this very clear thought like, oh my God, I forgot about that. My mind's being hijacked. And I'm like trying to perform my work during the day. I'm a very hard worker. I would consider myself still to this day a workaholic. I get a lot done. I can be a very, very, very productive person. And I like that. Today, that actually treats my disease. In those days, there was more of a frenzy and a frenetic energy around it. But anyway, I could feel that I wasn't able to focus on my work. I could see that I kept getting distracted. What time should I drink? Can I have a drink? Can I have another drink? Should I wait for a week? Should I wait for a weekend? How about Friday? How about Saturday? When? And there's just like whole planning committee that comes out of the basement and just hijacks my frickin' plane all the way to Cuba. And I have no control over it. Because obsession is stronger than self-will. That's why. There's no way to stop this thing. Obsession is so powerful, there's no amount of self-will. There's only one thing in the whole wide world that's stronger than obsession, and that's God. And I'm not using a power in my life. I'm not going to a power. I'm not turning my will in my life over to a power. I'm running on self, and I'm making decisions based on self, and I'm lighting my whole freaking house on fire. I don't even know, but I've basically just taken an entire can of gasoline and blown everything up, and it's about to explode. And if you asked me if I thought my life was about to explode, of course, denial being that cunning enemy, I would say, no, come on, man, me. Look at, I got it all together. I own a home, I got money, I got my kid in a private school, I'm alive on all that, you know, I got some leather boots and some freaking cool clothes, I got some jewelry. And my mind tells me that success has something to do with outside stuff. See, I never knew that success is success in prayer. I never knew that success is success being humble with God. I never knew that success means success is having peace in my day, staying in my lane, not being bothered by what you're saying and doing, not getting on my hamster wheel and running this insane rat race. I ran that rat race so long that alcohol was the only thing that could treat it. You know, and I'll tell you real quick, I'll put 5 minutes into like the whole pathology of, I have to look at my childhood at some point. And I do feel that that is something that is not spoken about enough in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's this weird thing sometimes with old timers where they're like, but your parents never have tied you to a chair and poured liquor down your throat. Well, let me tell you something. For me, I was spanked and I was hit and I was yelled at and I was beaten as a child. And you know what? I was never allowed to process that pain. And I felt so ugly and so full of shame everywhere I went. I felt dirty. I felt ugly. I felt unloved. I felt less than. And I could never go to my mom or my dad and say, I'm really sad or I'm so upset or my feelings are hurt. I'd be like, hey, no, shit. I didn't even know how to process. I didn't even know how to go to somebody and say I'm upset. You know what I would do? I would stuff and I would stuff and I would stuff and I would stuff and I would stuff that stuff down into a basement. Like a Raggedy Ann doll is just bursting at the seams. I would just stuff and stuff and stuff. And eventually someday, guess what starts happening to this kid? You would probably call her frustrated, angry, violent, you know, disturbed, disturbing, restless. I mean, that was me. It was coming out all over the place. I've studied enough about alcoholism to tell you that there can be three or four children in the same house with the same type of abuse going on. And it depends on how the child processes it in order for him to turn into an alcoholic. So some kids stuff it and they shut down. And they go into the back room and they start eating chocolate cake and they pretend none of it happens. And they're like, blah, 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 blah. And they really stuff so hard that they don't even remember their childhood. It's vanished. They've erased it. They've put it so far out of their memory that they're shut down. Not the alcoholic. Oh, no. Guess what we do? I'm climbing out of windows. My middle fingers are waving. I'm in my parents' face. Go ahead. Hit me again. That didn't hurt. I am so rebellious. I am so insane. I am constantly in trouble. Let me tell you what the psychological and the psychiatric community says about those children, though. In the end, we're the most treatable ones because we're still in touch with our feelings. We are so hurt and we are so sad and we are so full of shame and we are so angry and we are so wounded. And if you ask an alcoholic for 30 minutes about their childhood, they will go on and on and on. So in some ways, the alcohol and the alcoholic and the way our pathology and our disease grew is a blessing because our liability really does turn out to be our greatest asset. And thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous that it's here when we're ready to do something different instead of repeating the same cycle over and over and over again. So So I take that frustrated, angry child, and I, like I said, I didn't have social skills. I was so inappropriate, and I still can be in this day. You know, I can speak over people or mock them or talk out the side of my neck or character assassinate, but I didn't know how inappropriate that was because I didn't have a reference point. I didn't know. Rules really weren't for me. I came from pain and I came from hurt, and at a very early age I had that inferiority, superiority thing where I'm entitled and don't you know, and I'm mad and I'm going to tell you. And what's really inside of all of that is this weeping, crying, terrified child. I'm so hurt and I'm so wounded. I just want someone to hug me and tell me it's okay. The world is so scary and my parents can't be there for me and my siblings can't be there for me. And nobody ever, ever sat with me through any of this. So I'm this walking time bomb, and what happens is by the time I'm 11 years old and somebody hands me a Budweiser, the same thing that happened for me happened for you. I pop that first beer and it's like, oh my God, I can't believe the relief. I'm not mad at my parents right now. I'm not even ashamed. I can even look you in the eye. We can talk. We can laugh. Oh my God, let's sing some songs. I like you so much. I feel so good right now. I feel good. This is good. And I like jump out, you know, and I let my freak flag fly. And alcohol does for me what I can't do for myself. And the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde scenario begins to build. Now, I don't cross over the invisible line that first night. For me, I'm talking about my own life. It takes a while. It's a process for me to turn into a full-blown alcoholic. But I like the result I'm getting. And I start to drink, and I start to drink, and I start to loosen up, and I'm cooler, and I'm wearing cooler clothes, and I'm liking people, and I'm dating people, and I'm having sex, and all that. You know, and I can, like, just, like, let loose and cut loose. But then what happens is I wake up in the morning, and I've said and done pitiful and incomprehensible things. And so then I'm like, on top of all the childhood pathology that I've stuffed down, I'm like, oh my God, what did I say? Oh my God, that guy. Oh my God, where did I park? Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Now, I have all the childhood trauma. Now I start putting more trauma in there. Now I got all the drinking trauma. This is so embarrassing. I can't believe who I am. Blah, 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 blah. Well, that won't happen again. I'll drink tomorrow and it won't happen. But it starts to happen and happen and happen. And eventually I cross over the invisible line and I'm just one of those people that's like, ooh, God, don't invite her. She's so toxic. Keep her away. Keep her out of here. People are calling security on me. I'm getting kicked out of bars. I'm getting kicked out of places. You know, I can't get along with people. I can't keep a boyfriend. I can't keep a job. I'm hung over every day. I hate my life. By the way, alcohol is a huge depressant. So every morning I wake up and want to kill myself and swear I'm never going to drink again. And by 5 p.m, I change my mind because alcohol definitely sounds a lot better than blowing my brains out. And round and around and around I go in this terrible cycle. So if I don't treat A, that child that's all screwed up, B, the teenager that drank all those years that's all screwed up, and I just sit around with 10 years of untreated alcoholism, dry, so dry I could start a forest fire in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're damn straight I'm going to drink again. I don't have anything else to go to. I have nothing else to go to. Meetings are not going to treat this disease. It's a spiritual plan of action. My sponsor isn't going to save me. The book isn't going to save me. If I don't roll up my sleeves and get down to causes and conditions and get really, really self-honest and start really looking inward and owning mine, not yours, mine. Even my whole pathology with my childhood. At some point, I have to see that this is how I was molded. I don't have to blame my parents. It can just be the truth. I came from a screaming, spanking house. Do you think that my parents thought every time they spanked their kids that they were going to make an alcoholic that was going to live in the street and wind up in jail? They didn't think that. They just thought the kid's bad. Shut her up. You know, you need to listen. What's the matter with you? Come on, sit down. You need to freaking eat all the food on your plate. You didn't make your bed. What do you think this is? They don't know what they're doing. They really don't know what they're doing. They don't. You know, I'll tell you something. I don't want to go way off, but I want to tell you one of my favorite pathologies is Jeffrey Dahmer. Jeffrey Dahmer, in the end, like, cut people up and ate them and drilled holes in their holes in their head, and he dissected animals and so on and so forth. You know, his dad was a butcher for a while when he was a kid. And when Jeffrey was naughty, running around in the streets doing something bad, his dad would bring him down in the basement, sit him on the top of a freezer while his dad was chopping up a cow or a pig, and he'd say, "You're not listening to me, and you didn't do it right, and when the next time you better put your bike inside and I'll leave it in the street." And he's chopping up an animal and wrapping it in butcher paper while he's disciplining his child. Do you think for a minute that that butcher thought that he was creating a cannibalistic monster out of his kid? He didn't know. It's interesting. It's like, who do we blame? So information is really the key to this whole thing. I need information, and I need it every day, about this disease, about how it's passed down, about what makes people tick. I don't want to just run around hating everyone. That one's too sick for me. I want to have a deep understanding of how we got this way. Why did we turn to liquor? Why did we do this to our lives? You know, and what is the treatment for it? So this second time around where I wind up really blowing my life up, I drink, and within a year I am just wasted out of my mind, and now I'm mixing pills with it, and I've got heroin, and I've got coke, and I've got this, and I've got that. And, you know, I want to touch on that too, because there's a lot of controversy these days with, should Alcoholics Anonymous remain Alcoholics Anonymous, strictly liquor, or what do we do here, or things like this. My belief system is that, and I work with a lot of people, the kids that are coming in these days, none of them are real alcoholics. There's no such thing anymore. Real alcoholics are like 40 years old and up. Children don't come in here real alcoholics. They're like freaking snorting psych meds and drinking cold medication and, you know, shooting up antifreeze. And so for me personally for me, I'm not going to speak for all of AA. I want a safe place for these people to come. And their mind is still killing them. The main part of their disease centers in their mind. The whatever is only a symptom. And I think that anyone that can incorporate the 12 steps in their life has a chance of being in the sunlight of the Spirit, of being a divine expression, of being an attraction rather than a promotion. And if you look at neuroscience, you'll see that all of these, whether it's gambling, whether it's drinking, whether it's coke, whether it's masturbating to porn, whether it's chocolate, all of them run on the same neural pathway, which is called the reward system. And what happens is, I have a problem, and I gamble, and I don't feel so bad. I have a problem, I drink a beer, and I don't feel so bad. I have a problem, I eat a chocolate cake, I don't feel so bad. I have a problem, I masturbate to porn, and I don't feel so bad. There's a reward at the end of it. The reward winds up being the biggest monster, because I use it and use it and use it up until the whole body and psyche becomes addicted to it, and the original relief that I got from it is nowhere to be found. So when I see that that's the structure of untreated alcoholism, it's so much easier for me to tell a kid that's, you know, snorting his bunky psych meds and taking injections of antifreeze up his ass that, hey, you know what, you got untreated alcoholism. Take the cotton out of your ears, put it in your mouth, sit here in the chair, and always identify as an untreated alcoholic, because that's what we do in AA. Now, some people might have a real problem with this, and I am not here to water down a message or to, you know what, change a tradition or anything like that. I just want to help people. I really, really do. And the world is sick. If Bill and Bob had ever known in their wildest dreams what was going to happen in Alcoholics Anonymous 80 years later. So as I go along in my untreated psycho, blah, 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 and I drink, my whole life just blows up. Within 9 months, I'm drinking around the clock, I'm mixing drugs with it, and these people come over and they want to take my daughter. They're like, "You're skinny, you're sick, we see what's going on, your kid's crying all the time, you're a hot frickin' mess, why don't you get some help and we'll move your daughter into our house while you clean your life up." So I give away my kid. Why do I give away my kid? Why do I give away my kid? Why do I give away my kid? Because the obsession for alcohol is stronger than my maternal instinct to care for my child. I'm not a bad mother. I'm suffering from untreated alcoholism. I'm in the disease. I'm not a sociopath. This isn't about Ted Bundy's. It's not that. I'm an alcoholic, and I will drink to the bitter end. You give me a deadline to show up, and when I'm in the disease, I'm not going to show up. I'm going to be drunk. That's just the nature of the beast. I have to understand how the thing operates. But the shame is so big in the end. I hate myself. I'm just one big walking shame bomb, and that's what the steps are there for, is to lift this stuff and to be a new character with no reference to the old. So as time goes on, I give my daughter away. I pack my house up. I move into the street. And I just start turning tricks, and I live in the street for all of 2000, 2001, 2002, a good portion of 2003. You know, I started to write a book, and the other day I went to the police station because I wanted to get my mugshots and my records, and the lady pulled everything out, and I was thinking I had like 9 or 10 charges. That's what I thought, because I've been in jail so many times, but I couldn't remember. And she pulls everything up. I have 23 prostitution cases and 18 drug and alcohol related cases in the street. Like, this ain't a joke. This is not a joke. I am a miracle standing here. I really am. Alcoholics Anonymous did this. I didn't go to therapy to get this. My mom didn't all of a sudden apologize to me for me to get this. I didn't like go to the gym to get this. I didn't go to Anthony Robbins to get this. I came to AA, you know, linoleum floors and fold up metal chairs and toothless wonders and psych meds and crazies and horrible coffee with powdered creamer and a whole nine yards. It's too hot. It's too cold. The freaking lights are blowing out. The heat's the floor. The wall's about to explode. Jesus Christ. Duck for cover. Go smoke your shit in the fucking elementary kindergarten class. Whatever. You know? Welcome. Keep coming back. You know? It's a desperate situation. But I kept coming back. I kept coming back and I kept coming back. And more importantly, what happened when I was completely finished and in the street was that I went to rehab after rehab after rehab after rehab after rehab, and there was this one trick in the street that was just like Mr. Captain Save-A-Ho. He was sure he was going to save me, he was going to turn me into his wife, he was going to, I don't know, sprinkle some pixie dust every time I go into jail. You know, there he was, Hal, you have a visitor. You know, and he'd just be sitting on the other side of that glass, why are you doing this? You should really get clean, you know, your daughter really needs you, blah, 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 blah. And I had gone 3 years without even seeing my kid. Like, I lived in the street. When you live in the street for that long, you lose almost all your social skills, for real. Like, even talking to someone or having any linear thought. I can remember thinking things like, I don't know how old I am anymore. I remember really thinking it and trying to count. I remember thinking, what month is it? What day is it? What does it matter? I wonder how old my daughter is. Do you think she's reached puberty? Like, my life was just gone. And the whole idea of any bridge to safety, you know, or ever getting sober again, you know, every time I'd go in front of the judge, he'd say, Miss Howe, don't you want Prop 36? And I'd be like, death before detox, I'm not going, you know. Up to Alcoholics Anonymous, I hate that shit, it's for pussies and idiots, you know. Because I thought I tried it, but I didn't try anything. I just showed up loitering around. I don't know what I was doing. Judging everybody is what I was doing. I never really tried AA. I didn't. I didn't try it or I would have stayed to pray. I just scoffed, you know? So eventually, I got arrested so many times and I was so sick of it, like a deer in headlights, just living in the streets, you know, and I was sick. I had a hepatitis C. I still have it, you know? And I was weak and I was tired and I decided to start going into detox and rehabs again. And, you know, I think I've been into like 8 or 9 rehabs. You know, I know some people, I sponsored a girl just a couple months ago, 17 rehabs. I mean, this is unbelievable what's going on out there. This is just crazy. It is crazy, crazy, crazy out there. It is crazy out there. Every time I went, come out, a couple days later, drunk again, drunk again, drunk again, drunk again. Doesn't work, it doesn't work, it doesn't work, it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know, that's all I kept saying. This shit doesn't work. It's not going to work. Somebody handed me a tape of this guy named Bob Anderson from this group called Primetime down in Sherman Oaks. I would never say that my group's the be-all, end-all. I don't care where you go, Black Print, Pacific Group, Atlanta Group. It doesn't matter. I just happened to hear the message from these tapes. This guy, Bob Anderson, with 46 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, said the main part of the disease centers in my mind rather than my body, and untreated alcoholism isn't in the liquid, it's in my mind. And if I don't turn my will and my thought life over to the care of a higher power every minute of every day, I'm doomed an alcoholic death. And I was like, oh my God, why the hell didn't anybody ever tell me that before? Because if they did tell it to me, I never heard it. I didn't hear it like that. And he started to say on these tapes, watch your thoughts. Check your own track record. If the shoe fits, wear it. It's not in the liquid. It's not in the pipe. It's not in the cake. It's not in the porn. It's in
my inability to process all my pain. It's in my shame. It's in my guilt. It's in my dirty, dirty, dirty prostitute-y story. It's in my failure. It's in that I'll never be anyone. It's that I dropped or left my daughter. It's that I failed my parents. It's that I never made it through college. It's that I'm a big loser. And all the stories that I tell myself. And it creates this cycle where I get the fuck it's over and over and over and over and over again. Because I feel so useless that I don't even feel like I have any entitlement to even be in the same room with you. The self-loathing and the self-deprecation is so big that I build an ego that'll keep you away. And what I do is I look and I just go, I hate you, and 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 I hate you. Maybe like you. Hate you, like you. Well, kind of like you. And I hate most everybody. And I hate you because it's the only tool I have to keep you away. That's all I've got. I don't want to be raw. I don't want to be vulnerable. I shut that shit off when I was 6 years old and my parents started screaming and yelling and spanking. There was no one to go to and say, I'm hurt. My feelings are hurt. Mom, I feel like you hate me. Do you hate me? I was never able to do that. Every time you hit me, I feel like you hate me. Is that true? Oh, my God, I wouldn't even know how to do that. But those are the kinds of things that I have to face with the steps. Those are the kinds of things that I have to uncover, discover, and discard in the process of going through these steps. So I look at the second half of step one, and it says that my life is unmanageable. How much time do I have? 5 minutes? Who knows? Oh my God. I promise I'd stop. Okay, I'm gonna do 5 more minutes. I think 10 after. 15 after? Oh, 25 after? Oh, good. 25 after. Sorry about that. Okay. So let me think. Hold on. Where was I?
Second half
of step one, that my life is unmanageable. I had to come to the realization that it's my thought life that's unmanageable. That I had to start to look at every single solitary thought that surfs the waves of my brain. And as I started to wake up and I started to look at these thoughts and how they affected my emotional state, I could see that it was a real soul sickness. That alcoholism didn't need liquor. The liquor was but a symptom. That I would wake up in the morning and I would just want to die. I would wake up in the morning and I was sure that you hated me. I would wake up in the morning and I would tell myself the loser story. I would wake up in the morning and feel so ugly or so dirty or so unlovable or so whatever. So this second half of step one, that my life is unmanageable, I used to think it was like, oh, you know, I lost my purse, or I got a parking ticket, or I burned a hole in, you know, the couch with a cigarette. It's not that. It all is an inside job. It starts inside of me. It has nothing to do with the outside. Nothing to do at all with the outside. The outside's all going to change when I change on the inside. My relationships will get better. My relationship with my parents will get better. I will be able to love. I will be able to be raw and vulnerable and be like a 5-year-old and cry and tell you that my feelings were hurt. I will be able to say I'm sorry. I will be able to communicate and say, hey, can we talk about something? I think there was a misunderstanding. I will be able to do all of those things. And so what I need to do is I need to really, 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 really see that the calls are coming from inside the house. It has nothing to do with third dimensional stuff. It has nothing to do with the car, the yard, the house, the bathroom scale, the anything. It has to do with my perception. My eyes are broken. The camera and the lens that I look through the world with and then put back on me, it's broken. It's damaged. It doesn't work. It's got a glitch in it. It's sick. It's warped. It's bent. And I'm full flight from reality. I'm a downright mental defect, you know. It says that in the book. And so I look at step two, and it says that I need to come to believe that there is some kind of a power that can restore me. It's not a church. It's not a religion. We don't name anything. Muhammad, Buddha, Jesus, all that crazy stuff. It doesn't. We call it power. We call it God. That's how we roll in AA. And I actually really take offense to people that name their God anything else from the podium, because that's really so against what we're trying to do in AA. What we're trying to do here, and what I'm continuing to try to do, is build a relationship with a personal God as I understand him, and as I understand him every moment of every day through my experiences of turning my will and my thought life over to the care of this God. And look at the demonstration in step 11 where it says that I seek through conscious contact, that I seek to improve my conscious contact with this power. Well, if I'm seeking to improve my conscious contact with this power through prayer and meditation, then I would think that way down in step two, how am I going to come to believe? What? It's like some homework intellectual assignment, you know? I'm going to sit there, you know, at Denny's with my sponsor that I've met like 2 days ago. And, do you believe in God? Yes, I believe in God. Okay, I'm going to be saved. We're going on step three. It can't work that way. See, the steps for me, they are not a race. It's not like, hurry, 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 what step are you in? I'm in two. Oh, man, I'm in six. We both went to rehab at the same time. It's not about that. You know, that's all ego. It's a process. It's not a race. It's not a hurry, hurry, get there kind of a thing. It's a living application for my life. So I look at this step two, that I have to come to believe that there's a power that can restore me. And then I have to question, what would a restoration look like? What would sound-mindedness look like? Well, for me, what I heard through many other people is that a sound mind is a mind that's not occupied by self. A sound mind is an open mind. A sound mind is a mind with no preconceived ideas. A sound mind is a mind that's not attached to all my stories and all my biography, so that everywhere I go, I'm leading with my wound. Want to hear my story? Want to hear my story? I'm so sick. I'm so twisted. I lost everything. They all hate me. I'm a fucking loser. I'm a fat ass. You know, that? What is that? That's not going to do any good for anyone. A sound mind is an open mind. An open mind that maybe, just maybe, just maybe, I don't know anything. Maybe, just maybe, just maybe, every single solitary thought that surfs the waves of my brain is bullshit. Maybe, 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 every single thought that's coming from my subconscious mind to my conscious mind is skewed, is bent, and it is not accurate. Maybe I'm full of crap. Maybe I'm not even so smart. I used to think I was so smart. Maybe I'm not all that smart. Because I look at most people and I don't even give them a chance. They're all idiots. They're dummies. They're monkeys. They're primates with car keys. I got names for all kinds of people. I got names for them all. And there are people struggling in this world to get along and to get by, just like me. I get on the freeway. I don't see cars. I see idiots in front of me. Move, you idiots. Move, all of you idiots. I don't take into consideration that maybe somebody even has a cancer, or maybe they have 8 kids at home and they can barely feed them. I don't think about their life. I think about morons on the freeway. Move, idiots, move. You know, and that causes so much pain and conflict inside of me. To live like that, to live like that for the rest of my life, who would want to be around me? Who would want to be? Who would want to be having a relationship with me? Who would want to hire me? I wouldn't want to be around me. I become my own worst enemy when I'm in untreated alcoholism. And to see the disease still doesn't mean that it's going to now vanish. You see, if I don't let this power in my life, I can keep what I got forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. So I have to really get down to the application of step two and step three. And if I'm going to come to believe, I have to interact with this God, and I have to allow God into where the disease is. I have to ask this God to be in my mind and in my heart. So I say things like, power, can you please protect me from my mind? Because I'm a hater. I'm a hater. I'm frustrated. I want to get in people's faces. I'm a judgmental bitch. I can't stand myself. I don't want to be here. And I have all these opinions and they're killing me. I'm in a continuous state of conflict. Power, can you be with me? And I ask with my heart, and I ask with intention, like I'm standing in front of a judge in doing a plea bargain. Please, please, please give me one last time. Give me one last chance. I ask with all the feelings that I can muster up. Power, if you're there, can you help me? And when I pray with intention, I get relief. Something starts to happen. Something. The most common word for God is something. Something starts to happen. The creative intelligence of the universe enters me for the first time because I allow it to. I ask God to come in. I ask God to help me. He's very smart. God knows everything. It's a very, very, very wise energy, and it's inside of all of us. And if we can bump self out of the way, there's a genius that's been sitting there all the time. You know, and we've all had inklings and moments where, like, this brilliant line or a poem or a piece of art or something loving happened or came out of us, and we were like, God, where did that come from? We know that it's in there, but we don't know how to tap into it. It's the untapped resource. We don't know how to tap into it until we start to learn the application in Alcoholics Anonymous, that we have to improve this conscious contact with God as we understood Him. So I can never completely understand God, but it's understood that this miraculous power is the power for my life, and I bring this power in, and I start pleading and begging and talking to this power. And if I have an issue coming up, I say, God, help me not think about this person this way. Help me go to work tomorrow and not whatever, blow my, you know, my life up. You know, help me not hate my mom anymore. Help me not harbor resentment. Help me not have so much fear of the future that I think I'm never going to make it, that I'm going to push a shopping cart, that I'm going to, you know, have to blow my brains out or drink again. And I ask God to be with me, not just in the morning at the foot of my bed. I can get into so much trouble. I can leave the foot of my bed, and by the time I got a toothbrush in my mouth, I'm hating on somebody. For me, I'm a major hater. Some people are depressive. I'm just a hater. I am such a hater in untreated alcoholism. A hater. I'm going to argue. I'm going to get in your face. I'm going to get all sarcastic. I'm going to get all... And it's no fun. It's a painful place to be. I want to love, but I don't know how. God makes it possible. So as I start to get a real relationship with this power, and I start to really have an interaction with this power, it pushes me naturally into step three, where I make a decision every moment of every day to either go to self or turn my will and my thought life over to the care of this power. In the beginning, it's like playing a bad, bad video game. It is so exhausting to turn my will and my thought life over to the care of this power 24 hours a day, especially if I'm really spinning or tripping on something and something's really bothering me. It's continuous. It's a continuous plan of action. Just please, God, be with me. Protect me from my mind. Protect me from my mind. But as time goes on, I start to live in the sunlight of the Spirit. I start to have lots of fourth dimensional aha moments. I have fourth dimensional aha minutes. Minutes turn into hours. The hours turn into days. I see drama. I hear drama. I see problems. I hear problems. I'm like, oh, no, Turbo. We're not going there. I'm not touching it. And I naturally recoil as from a hot flame. I don't want to infect myself with your infected, untreated alcoholism. And I know how to keep my side of the street clean. I don't need to have a big opinion on what you're supposed to be doing in your life or what's supposed to happen or how it's all supposed to go down. I can remain centered with this God, because I've built a real living relationship with this God. I believe that the fourth step and the whole inventory process shouldn't be taken on until I do have a conscious contact with God. Because how am I going to do a fearless and thorough moral inventory if I'm terrified out of my mind of peeking into the future, of looking at the past, of writing all this stuff down, of making amends to these people? There's no way. God makes it possible. So again, for me, it's really not a race. It really is. It's a right now thing over and over and over. And as I get centered with this power, it becomes so much easier for me to go into step four, because even my grudge list is going to be sliced in half. By the time I've built a relationship with God, I realize 3/4 of the people I'm mad at, oh my God, I did it. I'm harboring resentment and I don't even want to look at my side. You know, I remember some stuff that was on my resentment list, like my boyfriend stole my jewelry. That boyfriend stole my jewelry too. Hey, I got 3 different boyfriends that stole my freaking jewelry. Well, what's the common denominator? I'm hanging out with junkies. I mean, come on, man. And I'm going to sit there and write for 45 minutes about 3 different boyfriends that stole my jewelry? You know, give me a break. It's insanity. It really, really, really is. So the steps are not a race. It's a spiritual plan of action. And I'm so blessed to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I could go on and on and on and on. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful program. And it's a way of life. And God is there for everyone to have. It's an equal opportunity. And, you know, even if you're new, you're a retread, you're starting over, even if you've got years and years and years in Alcoholics Anonymous, none of that matters. What matters is my conscious contact with this power in the moment that I'm in. Even if I had a bad day all day long, I can brush that aside and I can say, that's right, power, me and you, mostly you, You be the manager for my life today. Don't let me blow up my life anymore. Not my will, but thine be done. My creator, I'm now willing. You should have all of me. Remove from me all the blocks, you know. Let victory over my bullshit bear witness to everybody so that they can see that I'm a demonstration of somebody that's overcome some crap in AA. It is such a painful life when we wind up in here. AA, are you kidding? I got to go to AA. Oh, my God. I thought I was supposed to be somebody. People were going to touch the hem of my garment. I'm supposed to be rich. I'm supposed to be famous. I'm supposed to be a lot of things. It didn't work out that way. And now in my life today, I'm so grateful to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no place I'd rather be because I feel like I really found so many answers to the questions that just riddled me, you know, the blame and the shame and the trauma and the drama. I really need a living, loving God as He expresses in Himself. And in the end, that's the authority for my life. It's not my sponsor. It's not an old timer or a newcomer or a this or a that. It really, truly is a loving God as He expresses Himself through me. You know, I have a great relationship with my daughter. She's 25. We have walked through all of it. We're transparent. We're open. My relationship with my mom and dad is better than it ever was. I have real friends today, people that I can really talk to stuff about. I can be open. I can be free. I don't have to hold back. I can speak my mind and I can speak my emotions. I can say I'm sorry. I can be in loving interactions with people. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I have a very successful private practice. You know, and God made that possible. He really did. He gave me great clients that come back over and over and over again because through the principles embodied in the 12 steps, I'm a new character. I walk hand in hand with God. What you see when you look at me and you see that I'm with God, it's not self. It's the spiritual principles that are applied to my life to allow me to have a new experience, to be a new person, to have a renewal of my mind and my heart. And that's really what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. Thank you so much for letting me share that.